From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast, a packed show today as we have a couple different guests. We're going to talk with Michael Thompson, the Ole Miss administration member that was the leader for the rollout to the mascot, licensing, branding, and giving you a lot about the process to how they got here, all the way from the bear to Tony the Shark, the clothing that you can buy, and much more. What Tony has in common with Iron Man, the movie, and why he's not just a big furry lovable mascot. The one thing Neil and I have been not critical, but had some disagreement about as this rollout has happened. We'll also talk to Jeffrey Wright today. We'll talk a lot of football. We'll talk some baseball after the Ronald Acuna getting hit last night by the Marlins pitcher. Seems like we did that 2 days ago, as long as kind of the podcast is today. But anyway, that and more on today's show. Also, a reminder, we're going to be at Funky's tonight, 5:30-ish for a start time. Romero Miller, the former Ole Miss quarterback, will be in attendance with us. We'll talk a lot about his career, about the program now, about maybe his legacy, as Neil talks about how important he was at that time for Ole Miss from a football program standpoint. So those things coming to you. We're going to do drink and food specials at Funky's tonight. So come out, hang out with us. We'll have multiple trivia questions as well. So you can win some things. You can be entertained, hopefully. You can talk to Romero and have some good food and drink in the process there. And you can also have that at the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, another place. We're all over the daiquiri business. You can get them as little as $3.99, as big as 44 ounces, and more. You get the Speed Pass Plus, where you save money by downloading that. It is easy, it is convenient, it is efficient. Don't have to worry about credit card theft, identity skimmers, or anything. Identity theft or credit card skimmers, or anything else there with Speed Pass Plus. Next door to the Extra Crystal, you get the Mini Cheese Bites and those things. You probably need a vehicle to get over there, so Clark Ford, a good place to go for that.
You would need a vehicle to go get your daiquiris and then leave the vehicle there, catch an Uber, and then come back and get the daiquiris.
You can just keep the top on, don't put the straw in, and then you can transport it.
That's a good point.
I think that's Twitter, Oxford Police, is that right? I'm pretty sure that's right. Because, I mean, I always go the speed limit. I always leave the straw out of my daiquiri, so I hope I'm following the correct thing there.
You know, yesterday, a lot of the students were moving in, and there's construction and stuff going on,
Yeah, I'm sure Sal Lamar was not confusing at all for anyone yesterday.
Yesterday was a day where I was like, basically, everyone's drunk. Everyone's drunk. I mean, I've also learned today that construction people are not good traffic directors. They're awful. Among the worst. Anyway, Clark Ford, 662-257-1900. It's in Amory, Mississippi. Call the number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what you're looking for. And he'll send you a quote. Send you a couple of quotes. Give him a couple of things that you have in mind. He'll send you quotes right to the bottom line. You're going to get them within 15 minutes. No hassle, no haggling, all that stuff. It's just easy. And then you get your quote, and you decide how complicated you want it to be. You want to shop it around? You can. No one can stop you. Or you want to make it easy and just go ahead and get to the bottom line with Corey and the people there at Clark Ford. You get a great vehicle, great service after the sale, everything you could ever want. We'll make it even better. Tell Corey near the end of your deal, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our family of podcasts. It's $500 off at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
So we'll jump right in. We'll go to Michael Thompson, and we'll talk a lot about mascot and just Ole Miss fan experience here on the podcast. So on the Billy's Pecans Hotline, here is Michael Thompson. Michael, good morning on this Thursday. I have to say, I really appreciate you this week because we did not do it in concert, but as I told you a couple days ago, we were running our little Get Gear promotion. Our fan shop had some Landshark stuff. We are currently second in the network in new annual subs for the period in part because of your Landshark thing there. So good timing, and we'll send you your gift basket here in a few days.
Yeah, that's a pretty incredible luck for you guys. What was it, about
what, 24 hours, 48 hours from when you were already going to launch them?
Yeah, I mean, it was like right in the middle. It's almost like we sat down with you and almost went to the table and said, let's push this thing at 2 p.m. and you push it at 4 and here we go.
Yeah, it was well.
So really, I guess the credit is thank you for giving those marks to our whoever runs our fan shop early enough to get the material out there, because I know everybody doesn't have it yet.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that was one of those things that we had to weigh is how much do we get made or produced in the marketplace to be ready on that Saturday versus, while trying to protect the confidentiality of it. So, you know, we have hundreds of licensees out there that we could have sent it to early, but you run the risk of, you know, not even necessarily maliciously, but somebody tweeting about it or taking pictures or sharing about it. And we certainly wanted to hold all of that for one kind of key launch on Saturday.
Well, you get ready to roll this thing out, and you guys, whereas the Bear was a lot of just kind of dipping toe in different things, this was full on, and Neil and I both said pretty well done. Was there nervousness, or do you almost kind of know the reaction before it even gets started, and you just weather it and go, hey, this thing tested positively, and we feel really good about the product once it settles in?
Yeah, I saw that question last night on the board, is do you have any regrets about the Bear kind of mascot program, and look, I'll say this, and there was a question about regrets on the NCAA stuff too, but I'll say this, if you can't look back and reflect on, you know, a decision or series of decisions, you know, after they've been made, especially this far past some of those decisions, if you can't look back on those and genuinely be honest about you know, the things that you could have done better or things you shouldn't have done or should have done, then you really have no business being in a leadership position, to be honest with you. So, you know, the Bear thinking back and reflecting, that's been an interesting one. But I'll tell you, the situations were literally black and white. I mean, they were so different. If you remember, I may have even told you this. I think in that first week, well, I started here in August of 2010, and I think it was like the 10th day or the 20th day, you know, on the job that the vote had happened, the final vote had happened on the Black Bear. And then it was basically handed to athletics and say, hey, all right, vote's done. This is it. You guys go for it. Costume, mascot program, the works. And so we had to really sit down and think strategically about how we can do this and it actually work somewhat. But I think I told you, I mean, the first week I got at least one death threat, full-blown death threat voicemail that we had to turn in. But the emails were incredible. I mean, you remember the boards. I mean, it was meltdown mode, you know, at an exponential rate. And from that moment on, and from the very beginning, we were playing with at least one hand tied on our back, probably two. And so we had to do a couple of things. We had to not, as the expression went back then, shove it down people's throats. That was kind of one of the big sentiments out there, narratives out there. And the other narrative was that we were battling really heavily then was, you know, kind of the sanctity of Ole Miss and Rebels. And we were so careful and so intentional about making sure that we did not do anything with that mascot program that could even be misinterpreted as some sort of slippery slope, you know, thing. And one of the things that we really knew could get us into that territory of misinterpretation was a full licensing program. And it's funny, we actually have, I got them in my office in my drawer, the kind of final, I guess, Bear marks. And we did roll out a kids club, and we needed branding for that. So there was a kids club mark that featured, I guess, a little cub bear. But we never launched the adult mark. It was almost entirely to protect to eliminate any confusion about who we were, that we were the Ole Miss Rebels, and we were going to stay the Ole Miss Rebels. And along that, about that same time, we really started to put more permanent branding in place, permanent signage in place that said Ole Miss or Rebels or both. And we tried to really, really cement that in people's minds that the conspiracy theories of those going away were exactly that. They were just conspiracy theories. There was no truth to it, never has been truth to it, never will be truth to it. So you fast forward 7 years. So we're basically in some ways handicapped for the last few years of Bear, and it never caught on. So you may say, well, maybe if you had really, really pushed it hard, maybe it would have caught on. I don't know. I still don't think it would have. I think that there was so much animosity. It was so toxic. We couldn't even have Rebel would never win in the Grove. I'm not sure he never set foot in the Grove unless we were like filming a commercial or something like that. We had some pretty strict guidelines for our production crew for video boards, especially at football. Like we did not, if he got on the video board, every time he was on the video board, even in the frame, I was nervous. Because the last thing you want is a huge chunk of a stadium in your own stadium, booing something that if you can avoid it. So we really tried to avoid it. And this is different. This is a totally different ball game. The support before we even launched for this, as you know, it's grown organically over the years. And it's something that when this was kind of handed to us in October, we knew like, okay, we actually get to do it for real this time and like really like launch it right, develop the licensing program for retail, generate excitement, but like have fun with it and own it. I mean, having fun with it is key. It's interesting as we sit here and talk, and I've talked to people over the last few weeks about it. I'm not sure, and it's just a hypothesis, but I'm not sure that we could be where we are today without Preble the Bear. I think he actually served some sort of bizarre purpose of filling a gap that had to be filled by something that was just not going to work. It's just hard to follow a mascot that was so beloved for so many years, and it actually worked. So I feel like Rebel Bear, he served his purpose, as odd as that sounds. But I'm not sure if the vote had been all Landshark back in 2010, I don't know that it would have worked. I really don't. I think some of the Landshark, positivity and support was in some ways us being rebels and people rebelling against kind of the establishment and rebelling against the Bear. And Landshark was kind of that organic grassroots mascot. It was the people's mascot. And it just takes some time for that to get enough of a base to where you can launch it right. So that's a long answer, but
yeah.
I hope that makes sense.
I don't think they were ever released. Do you know the percentages on that vote back in 10?
On the
mascot, on the new one, when the Bear was chosen.
Yeah, I do remember that the student vote, so they could separate it from student alumni. I think you can separate it from faculty staff at the time.
Okay.
And as an aside, the total tangent, what's weird is before I got this job, I participated in one of the alumni focus groups. And it's like, not even, in fact, I don't even think I'd applied for the job. I didn't even know the job existed, but I had participated in one of those. They did all those focus groups across the region. But I think that Landshark won the student popular vote, but barely. I think it was really close.
Mm-hmm.
And then and remember, at the time, Landshark was much more of a student not mistake. It was much more supportive of our students. And then I think that the rest of the Ole Miss population that had voted, it didn't vote as high. And so when you looked at the aggregate, Bear had won, but remember, it had not won by much. I mean, it was like, I can't remember the numbers, and they're online somewhere.
Okay.
It was like a 50-something%, it's basically split.
Yeah.
And so, right there that half the people, just about half the people, aren't going to be happy. And, it's a totally different deal. Whereas this is almost the reverse. This was a no brainer.
So I saw you guys with the pyramid, which I thought was very smart, kind of explaining your marks and your logos. But you've got the script, you've got the new script M that's been gaining popularity the last couple of years. You've now put out at least three shark-related logos as well on merchandise. What's the balance there of making sure everything's represented while also not kind of diluting the things that you guys have spent so much money and time branding over the years?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, I'll tell you that when we went into the process of when we hired Rare Design of Hattiesburg at the agency to work on this program with us, I'd seen their work before when I was in Memphis, when they did the Memphis Grizzlies rebrand, and they had done some other NBA and some other sports rebrand logo development, and their work was incredible. And when we started those discussions, I never in a million years could have thought that we would end up with three mascot marks. That would be, it's very non-traditional. It would probably be counter to some, you know, quote unquote best practices out there. But as we started to go through the process, with them, and as we, you know, start with, you know, 40 sketches, 50 sketches, something like that of marks, and you start just whittling them down and polishing and tweaking. We got it down to five, and we took those five and did. We had a bunch of samples made. It's hard to look at a logo on screen or on a PDF printout or something like that, and really get a feel for what its essence is. It sounds really weird, but it's just true. So we had a bunch of blank. I ordered a bunch of Nike blank hats and lots of different colors. And then we started, we had one of our company that we go to for this kind of stuff, embroider. Oh golly, I think we had 200 different hats, that we took the five logos and stitched them on. And then we started testing those and really, looking at them with students, with kids of all ages, adults, several different groups of people that we wanted to test those marks with. And it was crazy. The three that you see out there on that pyramid, the three that we launched with, were almost, they were so close, favorites, or they were so equally, testing well, that it was almost like we were trying to eliminate one, but we couldn't because they tested so well. And they're different from each other. There's a little something for everybody in each of those logos is what we really started to learn. But you get these three logos, you've got to be very, very careful. I mean, we have to be very, very careful making sure that we don't confuse people and that we communicate exactly what we're trying to communicate. And that's that Ole Miss is the primary brand. That is it. It's Ole Miss and then Rebels. And so visually the pyramid is how we wanted to do that, to show, because we can say it all day long, but that pyramid, if you're a visual person like I am, immediately communicates the relationship and hierarchy of our different marks. And so that was an important piece and one that we certainly wanted to have public at launch. That was something that was, you know, intended to be an internal graphic, but something that we quickly realized the value of it externally because it told the truth about what we are. And so the part about dilution is a little bit different. Now it's an art, it's not a science. And what you'll see now, because they're new marks, you will see your eyes and the fans, the consumers, will pick up on more of that product out there just because it's new and they'll start to see more of it. But in reality, if you were to look at the portfolio of retail sales and merchandising, the Ole Miss mark and Rebels, it's vast majority of what the product that's out there will be. And that's how it should be. I mean, and that's what you do. The other piece of it is you won't see those marks. Somebody had asked me if we'd see them on the football field. No, I can't imagine anything at the 50-yard line other than a huge stacked Ole Miss script. I mean, that is our brand, and then Ole Miss and Rebels in the end zones. There are places that, like uniforms and things like that, that you just, those marks are not supposed to be there. But that doesn't mean at retail you shouldn't have a lot of product out there that, that people get excited about and purchase. We've been, as a brand, we've been somewhat handicapped for the last few years because of our portfolio of logos that licensees can use, because we didn't really have a mascot. I mean, we didn't have a mascot mark, especially not an, an adult one. And so that's a big opportunity. I mean, it gives people choice in the marketplace. It gives people, you know, another reason to buy one more hat, buy one more T-shirt. And those are sales that, that we need, that are valuable for us, that, that help our overall budget.
So will they be in any spot whatsoever on any uniforms at this point?
There's a spot. There's a spot on the back of the helmet. If you remember, on the back, like just to the left of the stripe, you're looking at the back of the helmet where there was a little state outline.
Yeah.
You can imagine what that will be.
Right.
Just very subtly swapped out to.
To the bear.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I got confused.
Yeah, the
mark that will go there will be territory. That's the name of that mark.
I've got a more important question here. But what does the adult bear mark look like that we've never seen?
I think there's about four people that have laid eyes on it.
Okay.
So, I'll show it to you one day.
I'd love to see it.
In a drawer in a file cabinet. It's embroidered too. Like I've got stitches of it too. And it is a really really cool mark. Like a really cool mark. You know, it would have sold some product, not much, but it would have sold some product. But it also, at the expense of selling the product, it would have been confusing and it had the potential to be completely misinterpreted as that part of that slippery slope narrative that, that we just had to avoid at all costs.
Took a break in this talk with Michael to tell you the podcast is also brought to you by Oxford Wine and Spirits, quickly becoming one of Oxford's most popular places to buy wine and spirits in the local area, conveniently located close to campus on College Hill Road next to the new Lost Pizza. Noah and I shop there regularly, and nothing comes into the store that unless it is tasted first, and the price has to be at or below what they believe it should be. For example, something may taste pretty good, but its price does not have value. It will not come into the store. Everyday prices are 5% lower than industry standards. And if you're a podcast listener, you go into the store and stock up for the weekend, they'll get you an additional 5% off wine, 10% off liquor if you spend $150 or more and say you heard about it on the podcast. So when you get to town, make sure you check out Oxford Wine and Spirits to stock up. Also, the Mid-South is growing faster than ever, and Stacy Berry is the name to know in Memphis. So we're trying to go downtown, midtown, Germantown, or Collierville. Check out Stacy Berry with Keller Williams. Keller Williams is the number one real estate agency in the world for agents, units sold, and volume sold. And the Berry home team is now an integral part of that brand. Born and raised in the Bluff City, she knows the dynamic and unique intricacies the city has to offer and wants to put you in the 901 today. So if you're looking to sell a home, buy a home, or invest in real estate, the Berry Home Team is the place to go. You can let her unlock Memphis at theberryhometeam.com. Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs, tysondrugs.com, or the great app they have, and they're located in downtown Holly Springs. They deliver wherever you are. Give them a call, 662-252-2321. And you can also see their Oxford store as well as G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar. They have great local service, and they also deliver anywhere in the Oxford area. And then last but not least, the podcast is brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Seto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting and understands your market. Leader in condo financing and the float down option. So you can find Jason at 662-234-2704. Or JLo, that's JLOWE, at communitymtg.com. Now back to Michael Thompson on the Billy's Pecans hotline. All right, so I asked you the other day what kind of even sparked you you coming on the show. Romero had done some stuff on campus. He had a hat that had the Finn M on it. People liked it. They asked me where to get it, and as you explained to me in about 5 minutes, and you're probably going to do here, that's kind of a complicated answer as far as how long it takes to get this stuff out in the market.
Oh, it is. I would do anything to, you know, walk across the street to a embroidery machine and just start stitching. I kind of have to back up a little bit. I'll go to your thing. Don't let me answer the Romero question. So there'll be a video coming out in the next few days, couple of weeks. I can't remember when we're launching it, but it'll be fun. And Romero was gracious enough to lend his acting abilities to us. for a piece of that. And when he got there, we were, you know, it's not like we have costume design or wardrobe or anybody like that. But, I mean, we had just had these shirts screen printed for our marketing interns and staff that are on game day walking around the concourse and talking to people. So it's got a big Rebel Rewards logo on the back. And then on the front, it's got the shark logo with the M that's part of the shark. And that logo, the technical name for that, or the official name of that logo is Snap. So it's got a Snap logo and then Fins Up and an Ole Miss logo. And so we gave one of those to wear. And then we had one of those hats that he got. It was one of the ones that was one of the prototype or the samples that we had taken blanks and had stitched so that we could review the logos and test logos. And so those were both items that were created by us, you know, or I guess commissioned by us, and are not at retail yet. But so it begs the question, so when will they be at retail? Well, as you can imagine, you think about a company the size of Nike that has an incredible portfolio of schools, NFL teams, and I mean, you name it, they supply a lot of the gear and apparel for loads of people. And so they have a system. I mean, they have a whole way that they do things, the way that they manufacture. So almost all this stuff is manufactured overseas. And the lead time on these items is incredible. So like the Nike rep, I think, is coming here this week. He comes here this week and he'll meet with each of the teams and our equipment managers about the product that they want. They'll show us catalogs and then the teams will order the different things that they want for their student athletes, like practice gear, t-shirts, shorts, I mean, jerseys, whatever. And that stuff will come, I think it could be as late as 2020. And so they are already in the kind of 2020 planning mode and product design mode. And it's like a big cruise ship. I mean, it's hard to turn a huge ship. And so they're huge. And so you get all the efficiencies of having a big company. But one of the things that you're going to sacrifice there is, I guess, some of the nimbleness that you may need for something like this, something specific like this kind of hot market, we'll call it, or new logo introduction. So it's not like we could have given the marks to Nike 18 months ago. That wasn't, you know, physically possible. But so Nike in all of this, they recently, to solve some of this and solve some of the retail issue, they have a company called BCS, which is a Nike licensee. So BCS is allowed to take Nike blank product and, just with a swoosh and, create, other products, other branded product, other officially licensed products. You can insert any school, NFL team, whatever. And then they can sell those to retailers. And so they're a licensee of Nike. And then if they produce a Nike Ole Miss shirt, then they are also an Ole Miss licensee, which BCS is. And so, but there's some nuances to that. So Nike would create all of these blanks and BCS receives a bunch of blanks and then they design and produce product for their different clients and licensees. And so right now BCS has the Landshark marks. They have some Nike blanks in certain colors, and I'll get to colors here in a minute, but they will now start to produce some of the core products, definitely t-shirts, polos, hats. Headwear for Nike is a little bit different. All of the headwear comes from overseas. So it's kind of this, kind of a little nuance to this that makes things trickier. So headwear, for whatever reason, takes longer to get in the States and here locally than some of the other items. And so it's just a process, and it's one that is challenging sometimes, just because we see something in our culture, we see it, we want it right then. As much as I would love to take the rest of our Nike blanks and have them stitched by our embroiderer out of town and then start selling them, we're not a licensee. They need to be officially licensed through CLC, which is our licensing partner. So is that, I mean, it's somewhat complicated. Does that help?
Yeah, I mean, there'll be more product soon and in a long time, too. It's just going to kind of start trickling out and funneling out is basically what I'm getting out of that.
That's exactly right. So yeah, on Saturday, well, a couple weeks before Saturday, we had given the marks with some strict confidentiality rules to a very small number of licensees that our licensing department on campus had great relationships with, and our CLC had great relationships with. And we knew that they could A, turn the product fast enough, and B, really honor the confidentiality of what it is that we wanted to do. And so we got it to them. They started designing product and submitting it to CLC for approval. And once it was approved, all of the local retailers, Campus Bookmart, the Ole Miss Bookstore, Rebel Rags, at the Rebel Shop, our official store, they were then contacted by the licensees and said, hey, we've got some new products, a new catalog you may want to look at, and you need to look at it like today. So you need to get your order in. And so there was caps and T-shirts right there, and that's what the first couple of items that rolled off the press were. And then on Saturday afternoon, the full portfolio of licensees, the hundreds that are an official licensee for the University of Mississippi, they were given all the marks. So some of them had a head start. But then the rest of the balance of the licensees received those marks either Saturday afternoon or Monday morning. I can't remember exactly when it went out. But so then you're starting to see a lot of product trickle in over the next weeks, months, whatever. But again, Nike would probably be the trickier one just because of the size and scope of that company.
How many versions of the actual shark mascot did you go through or study or look at before you chose the one that you chose?
Sketch wise, oh golly, I mean, we had to, if there was a shark logo or caricature, or because there aren't a lot of mascots, but if we looked at just about every single possible shark that existed, and then sketch some of our own, you know, 10, 20 variations. I mean, you know, some of them small variations on a different design. And as we started to really hone in on the personality that we wanted the shark to have, to Tony to have, there's and some of the things that we want him to be able to do, like physically, those weigh in a lot. Those are really important factors in design. And we early on, we wanted a mascot that was very, very athletic. That was kind of superhero like, it's kind of out of this world like. And the beauty of a land shark mascot is that it's a fictitious character. I mean, it doesn't exist. So we can do really whatever we want. It was a pretty clean slate because the you know, it doesn't exist in real life. And as we looked at what we wanted from a personality standpoint, and from a stunts and, I mean, dunking at basketball, things like that, those certainly impacted how the costume would be designed. And there's some of this is already out there, but we went to a totally different place. I mean, if you look at mascot costumes out there, 90% of them are created by the same company in Canada called Street Characters. That's who did Rebel the Bear. They do about 90% of the mascots that you see. And it's in some way, it's some reason why a lot of them kind of look the same. It's that thick felt fur, huge, huge heads, almost kind of goofy, oafy, not much mobility, not much vision. And for what we wanted to do, we knew that mold is not going to work. And so we went a totally different direction and went to kind of the Hollywood route and got partnered up with a company in Hollywood that had worked on, I mean, pretty much designed the Iron Man costume from the movies, worked in Alien Predator, did a lot of prop development on The Dark Knight, And the guy, the lead guy who created this for us, he was also, he's not only is he a designer and kind of mold maker, costume maker, he also is a I don't know what you call this, I don't know what you call him, but an actor that is in these costumed things. You never see his face, but I think he was in Predator 2 or something, like in one of these costumes. He's been in some of these things, so he understands the things that we wanted to get out of the personality and movement and kind of the physical things that we wanted the mascot to do. He not only could design that, but he had firsthand knowledge of what it feels like to be in something like that. And so as we went through the different options with him, he would make these like miniature molds about, I don't know, it's almost like the size of like a football. And he would make these molds and out of clay, and then send us pictures. And we would, send back comments like, let's take this off the nose, do this, this kind of stuff. And that went on for a while until when we finally liked what we saw in that kind of football size mold. Then he took it to kind of a whole different level of creating the first prototype. And then he brought the prototype over, and we had our mascots, our performer, get in there and try all kinds of different things, give feedback. He was here with it. The designer was here in Oxford, and the performer would give feedback to him right there. I mean, he even went back to California, shaved 40% of the weight off the head. And I mean, little things like this that most people would never even think about. But it was a long process. Like I said, there aren't that many sharp, things to look at out there. And so we were able to, I think we looked at every single one. I mean, that would be my guess. We didn't look at all of them. We maybe missed a handful.
Back to merchandise. One last thing there. I would assume your worst nightmare is the off-brand material that sometimes ends up in Walmart with different colors and different things that are not actually your official colors. Maybe not like that, but you've dealt with some powder blue issues. How do you sort of sync up the exact color that comes out of that once you've started using it more and more over the last few years?
Yeah, that's one of the tougher things, and a lot of it goes back to how I was describing Nike and just the sideline apparel companies, just their size. And so look, they try to create as much efficiency as possible. That's why they're profitable companies. But the powder blue, story is an interesting one of colors. And so if you remember, I don't remember the year. It was maybe 13, 14, somewhere in there. And the coaches, went on the sideline, want to wear a different color so that the student athletes players kind of recognize them, right? And so one game in there, the coaches wore a Nike, a Nike Golf was the line, light blue shirt. Around that same time, we had done the first kind of powder blue helmet game in a long time. And if you go back and look at it, the powder blue on the helmet was nowhere near the baby blue or Carolina blue that was on those polos. But I can't remember, like I said, I can't remember which game it was, but something happened, and it just was like people loved it. They loved the shirts. It was crazy, and it was never really intended to be some retail push ever, or at least not at that time. But the fan feedback, the fan, wanting to kind of pull some of this product through the market that was this light blue, was incredible. I mean, people were licensees that later that week were submitting new artwork, to CLC to produce, light blue shirts, like blue polos, hats, you name it. But it never matched. And we knew that it was kind of a train that just kind of left. What was interesting about it is Nike did not have the color of fabric that matched, or at least they didn't have it in what they call their core product. And so the core product is just a handful of colors, maybe 12, 15 colors, somewhere in there. It's not a ton, but it's the gray and black, red, blue, I mean, red, navy, royal, basically the colors you would think are the most popular colors. Because remember, they're about making money and being efficient. So they're going to produce, a lot of fabric and dye the fabric for the most popular colors, the most used colors. And the powder blue match, if you wanted to match the helmets, was not one of those colors. You could have gone either. We could have gone royal, which royal to me is a huge mistake because it's kind of in the middle. I mean, it's like, wait, are they trying? Is it supposed to be navy and they made a mistake? Is that supposed to be powder blue and they made a mistake? So royal is kind of a no-no for us. And then you have the other Nike option of what's called Valor Blue, and then you think of it as baby blue or Carolina blue. Not powder blue. Powder blue is what's on those helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And so the what happened was BCS, which remember that's the company that is a Nike licensee, they're getting all this feedback from the retailer saying, hey, you gotta start making some Nike light blue powder blue stuff. Well, the only option was at that point Valor Blue or Royal Blue, and they went Valor Blue. And started creating this product and, polos and shirts and hats and things like that. And it got into the marketplace and it sold like crazy. I mean, it was selling like crazy, which is good. It was good, except that it didn't match and it never matched. But it was as close as Nike could get, like it, in the core product line. And so remember the lead times we talked about with Nike. So right when this is happening, we started to get with Nike and be like, all right, look, this is something that we have to explore. You've got to match this color to our helmet. So we sent them the helmet. I mean, shipped it to Beaverton or wherever. And I mean, they, ran the color analysis on it and all this stuff. And we came up with a PMS color. And they said, look, we've got a very, very close color that we can do, and it's called Italy Blue. And the San Diego Chargers use it for some stuff, but really nobody else uses that blue. If you look out there, that blue is pretty unique to us, Italy Blue, the correct powder blue. But so they take all of our orders, and they take the retail orders, and they go and they dye the fabric, and this is why the lead times are so long. And you have all this fabric out there that's the correct color. But then what happens is that once all that stuff sells, back to square one. And so then it's like, all right, the stuff sold like crazy. We got to get some more product. Well, there's no more fabric. Nike doesn't have any more fabric of that color. And so the default was Valor Blue again. It goes back to Carolina Blue. So you start to see this. It's almost like a vicious cycle. That's tough to break. We're working, as proactively as we can to flush some of the Valor Blue out. But it's much harder than you think. I mean, when you think about the scope of retail and licensing, and you also think about lead times, the stuff you're seeing coming to the marketplace today in the store today could have been ordered, a year ago. And so it's like this lag time is so great that it's really hard to flush something because of the lead times and lag times. But so again, that's like something that most people would not understand and think that like you just go grab some, Italy blue blanks. Well, I mean, if there's no Italy blue fabric from Nike, then you're SOL, right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, we appreciate it. If you'd like to, deliver the bear costume over, we can display it here in the studio for when we do videos and different things. We'll be happy to take it off your hands.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no telling. I don't know. Maybe there's a time for that to go in some future museum that we're talking about. Who knows?
Where is it right now?
You know what? Maybe it's never seen again. There's a chance. Who knows?
Where's the bear costume right now?
It's locked up somewhere. I mean, it's
It's in your office, isn't it? Light over there.
That didn't stop the crew from Ocean's 11. It might not stop us.
Yeah, no, it might not. There's been that thing. It may not smell that great. And it's, I tell you what, it's a huge. You put that sucker in a bag, and it is a huge. It takes up a lot of space.
Yeah,
and we had a couple of them.
That's true.
So yeah, it's yeah. I'm excited about this new chapter. The organic nature and the kind of the grassroots nature of which Landshark was born, really again gave us it let us take the gloves off and be able to have so much more fun with it and be creative with it. And you'll see a lot more of that this season. I mean, again, we would not let Rebel go through the Grove. I mean, it was not safe. It literally was not safe. And but this is a different deal. I mean, this is a mascot program that we are going, you know, full bore with. We don't worry about the slippery slope narrative that was so strong back then. And it's not nearly as strong now because people have realized that we're always going to be Ole Miss, we're always going to be the Rebels, and so that's not as big of a challenge. So we're able to do some different stuff, some unique stuff with this that I know our whole, well, the mascots. There's nobody more excited than our spirit squads. Nobody.
Yeah. Well, hopefully your next 8 years have far less mascot talk than the previous eight. So we'll.
This is the last one. I'm not doing another one. I think I told Ross to do it. This is it. I can't. This is enough to almost kill you. You know what I mean?
Not even a female one to join him.
Oh, I've never. I don't know about. I've seen some funny and some really clever and creative ideas out there about that. I mean, you know, who knows? But it certainly wouldn't be anything that's in the realm of controversial, just because we've had enough of that on mascots. So yeah, if somebody else were to later come out, it would be some sort of brother, sister, mother, cousin, Mississippi. So we're all related, it seems like. So it would be some sort of familial relationship with Tony.
Completely last thing, kept you longer than I meant to. How much was the costume, just curious, to make?
It's hard to say because we've got, I think we've got, if I'm not mistaken, we have four costumes.
Different sports. I can't remember
the total, you know, I think we spent like on the, and Mark, like the logo development, costume design, costume manufacturing, somewhere in that, I think it was 50,000 to 75,000 range.
Okay.
Somewhere in there, which I think that if I remember right, Rebel Bear costumes, I think we're 12,000 each. The suckers are expensive. I mean, I guess anytime you're going to build something from scratch, but it's expensive. There's a lot of time that was put into it. So if you look kind of like the hourly rate or design rate, it's probably pretty fair.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. Let's talk to you again soon.
All right, guys. Talk to you later. Thanks a lot.
Our thanks to Michael Thompson for his time on the program. This podcast is brought to you in part by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. Go in, tell Gene and Sandy Grass that you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast. You heard about it at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs, 1.75% APY, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And the podcast brought to you by Megan Phillips with LAH Real Estate. She's the person to call for all your real estate needs in the Birmingham area. With almost a decade of experience, Megan's knowledge and expertise can help you buy or sell your home today. So please visit her website, MeganMPhillips.com. That's MEAGANMPhillips.com. Or call Megan at 205-602-7929. Again, 205-602-7929. 7929. And Rebel Nation, 2018's the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Now back to the Billy's Pecans Hotline and one Jeffrey Wright of 92.9 ESPN in Memphis.
Jeffrey, good morning on this Thursday. Hope you're doing well. We'll start here. We haven't really talked much about baseball at all. I know you're into it. Is the Cardinals making a little bit of a run here? But
a little bit
of a run. Yeah, big run maybe.
I still can't figure out if the Cardinals are good yet.
You think they're just having a hot few weeks?
By National League standards, they're good.
Like, I see holes everywhere. They clearly need multiple more bullpen arms. Like, but at the same time, like, their run differential is better than the Phillies and the Brewers. And, like, to me, both, I don't know, for whatever reason, both the Phillies and the Brewers pass more of the eye test to me than the Cardinals do. But, I mean, they're all right there.
I don't know if you watched the Brewers much lately. They made a couple of moves at the deadline to add bats. And, yeah, their lineup's really good. But yesterday they lost a game because Travis Shaw was playing second base. Because Travis Shaw can't play second base. He's too big. He's too slow. He can't play second base. And so balls.
Yeah, but you know the rule, man. I don't care if it's 9-year-old baseball. I don't care if it's high school baseball, college baseball, major league baseball. If you can hit, they're going to put you in the lineup.
Yeah, they are. But there does come a point where you have to have some defense on the field. And the Brewers don't. I think it's going to hurt them. I agree with you about the Cardinals.
Mike Bianco would disagree.
I agree with you about the Cardinals and their arms. But the guy's done a great job revamping that bullpen. I'm curious to see if they've got so many young guys in there. I'm curious to see if they hit that September wall when they're not used to pitching in September. Does it impact them in the second half? But it is somewhat of a validation of John Mozeliak because I kind of laughed when they did it. They fired Matheny, and I joked about it, but I thought, you know, all of this is not Matheny's fault. But it's starting to look like the majority of this was Matheny's fault.
You there?
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, Neil, repeat the question.
Oh, I was just saying I laughed when they made the move to fire Matheny and kind of blamed everything on Matheny. I thought everything's not Matheny's fault, but since they've played as well as they have since they fired him, maybe the majority of it was Matheny's fault.
Oh, I mean, I hated Mike Matheny as a manager. Like, I really did. Like, I truly hated him. Like, he's actually very dumb. He's very, like, he has no feel for a game. Like, watching him try to make a double switch was one of the funnier things, like, I could actually enjoy in baseball.
I miss him a lot.
But also, like, I was also very aware of, like, okay, the roster just wasn't that good. But you got him out of there, and then you started moving away some of the pieces that he was, like, a lot of the bullpen arms, like, a lot of the people that he was playing, those were his guys. And you got rid of them, and lo and behold, they started playing some of the younger guys, and especially in the bullpen. And it turns out that, yeah, he was the problem.
So
at the same time, like, that is the ultimate example. Trust your gut. Like, my gut was this guy is I'm not saying, like, this was a World Series caliber team without him, but he minimized whatever it was. And now we're starting to see what it actually is possible for them to be.
So staying in the National League, who looked worse last night, Jose Ureña or Keith Hernandez?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's got to be Hernandez, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, because at the end of the day, no one told Keith Hernandez to start talking.
You know, Ureña, and I think he was throwing at him, but he's crazy wild. Yeah, but here's my point. Hold on.
Guy wasn't set up inside. That's always the giveaway.
Here's the only thing I'm going to say about it. I believe he was throwing at him. To answer Chase's question, it's definitely Hernandez because there is at least a 1% chance that this guy who, like, he pitched against the Cubs in the opener and hit three dudes in four innings.
Well, just before the pitch, the commentators on Fox Sports go, this guy's really wild, blah, 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 blah. Literally, I mean, 2 seconds before the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he's Ricky Vaughn, the Latin version.
Yeah.
So it's possible. I don't think it's likely. I don't think it's probable.
Say, now, in saying that, you'd be storming his front door had it been a Chris Bryant last night.
Oh, I was upset about it, and it was a Brave. I was upset about it, and I don't like the Braves.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is there's at least a 1% chance that it got away.
It was the fastest pitch of his career on the first pitch of a start.
Yeah,
I don't
career.
Even know if there's a 1% chance.
You're right. It's,
I really
it, it might be a 0.1% chance, but that's a bigger percentage chance than there was that Keith Hernandez made a mistake in accidentally talking. Keith Hernandez actually meant that.
Well, no, he when he had the chance to kind of
you he could walk tell, it back. Yeah,
was it Gary Thorne? Is it Thorne still? Whoever it was, like next to him, like he gave him kind of like a chance to be like, and then he doubled down.
For those of you who aren't aware of what we're talking about, Keith Hernandez, the former Cardinal, former Met, he's now...
Hey, whoa.
He played for the Cardinals.
Keith Hernandez, hold on. Do not say that. Holy
no,
cow.
Sir.
That is ridiculous.
He's a former Cardinal.
The former Met.
I can present proof. I can do it. Keith Hernandez.
Larry Walker was a Cardinal.
He was a Cardinal. He wore that stupid uniform. Keith Hernandez, former Cardinal.
It's like going famed New York Met, Tom Glavine, last night.
Hey.
Who could forget all of those years that Tom Glavine was striking out people with the Mets?
Former St. Louis Cardinals first baseman Keith Hernandez said last night, he's a Mets broadcaster now, even though he was a Cardinal. He said that, hey, when a guy's hot like that, you got to hit him. You know, you don't throw at his head or his neck, but you got to hit him.
Well, at least he said
famed,
you don't throw at his head.
Famed Florida Marlin, Ivan Rodriguez.
Former Atlanta Hawks star Carmelo Anthony said.
Oh, God.
That's unbelievable. That's quite a spin zone there.
Hey, I will go find the proof.
By the way, Chase, you know, I know the Cardinals are kind of good.
Getting snippy Neil back?
Yeah. Cardinals kind of went away. Cardinals kind of went away for about 2 years, really stopped bothering him, and now all of a sudden, got to make sure everyone knows Keith Hernandez wore the birds on the bat, baby.
Let me say for the record to correct myself, even in this magical three-year run, I have watched the Cardinals more than any non-Cardinal fan probably in the world and cheered against them just as hard today as I cheered against them back in
the day. Never lost your resolve?
I never lost my Cardinal hatred resolve. I think it is ingrained in me.
Sometimes when night's darkest before the dawn, you just got to really, really dig in.
Yep.
I will give Brian Snicker credit last night. I don't think he was acting. I think he was legitimately very pissed off and was more than willing to throw some blows last night.
Oh, yeah. I mean
that was an impressive manager performance as far as getting out there, kind of leading your team out on the field for the benches
to
be cleared.
It was like it truly was like his Braveheart moment.
Well, hey, let me ask a question, because Carpenter got hit in the hand last night and the Cardinals released that the x-rays were negative. Has the Braves said anything about Acuna's x-rays?
The beat writer said that it was believed to be okay, but there have been no official word.
I mean...
Okay, for instance, let's compare those two moments last night. Acuna gets drilled. There wasn't even a count yet, correct?
No, first pitch.
First pitch of the game.
First pitch, okay. So when Carpenter gets hit, I believe it was 2-2, and it had been a pretty long at bat.
That was the seventh inning, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, let's get real. Like, Don Mattingly and Keith Hernandez are contemporaries. Let's not overcomplicate this.
Yeah, sure. And I don't think
And you can tell a lot from reactions too, because a good example, when Brian got hit in the head that day, whoever the pitcher was, I don't remember. Remember?
Oh, for the Rockies.
Yeah, whatever.
Chris Bryant, yeah.
So the pitcher kind of almost freaked out and was like, oh, my God. Like, he kind of took a step back and threw his hands up. Urena last night almost tried to just take the Braves on. I mean,
he dropped his glove.
Yeah,
he dropped his glove.
He dropped his glove. It's like when people are saying there's you don't know what he was doing. It's like, yes, I do.
Yeah. He was ready to go.
Like, there is –
I guess, give the umpires credit here because their initial decision was not to throw him out.
Yeah.
And when they got back together, somebody, I always talk about hand raised guy, Jeffrey, somebody in that umpires meeting raised his hand and said, hey, listen, fellas.
If we don't toss him right
here. We've got two choices right now. Choice one is we can kick him out and there's a decent chance we just have a baseball game. Choice two is we let him stay out here, and we are going to be out here for 5.5 hours. The paperwork's going to take us till 7
in
the morning.
And he's got a hit in a couple innings.
And this thing's going to go to hell in a handbasket, and what do you want to do? And somebody goes, you know what? It was intentional. He's out. And the game was normal, and the paperwork's not that bad. That was a self-preservation decision by the umpires, and I have to applaud.
So what's the retaliation if you're the Braves?
I don't know. That's my other thing. So speaking of hand-raised guy, whatever happened to hand-raised guy when someone says, hey, man, this guy's hit 3 bombs in 3 days against us. We got to hit him. Whatever happened to hand-raised guy going, Jeffrey, why? He's hit it out 3 times in a row on us, so therefore we have to hit him because we can't get him out? Someone explain the logic to me.
Chipper Jones had the best tweet. He goes, it's really the same thing as, hey, Jacob deGrom's just shoving it up our ass for 8 innings. Someone take a bat out there and break his arm.
Yes.
Charge out of the dugout with the bat. Swing at him.
Speaking of Chipper, I told Chase this, Neil, I don't know if I told you this, but when he had his Hall of Fame induction ceremony, I did what I usually do. I wind up just on a guy's Wikipedia page. His personal life, like just that, like it's like 2 or 3 paragraphs. Those 2 or 3 paragraphs are like a white trash bingo card. Like it is unbelievable. It's like affairs, Playboy models, Hooters waitresses, fishing, hunting, booze, like. It honestly sounds like an old school like country western song. It's unbelievable.
That's who he is.
No, that's the best part. Yeah, like
it's real.
Chipper Jones could, like, in the grand scheme of things, like Chipper Jones could be like, say, like, for instance, in spite of all those things I just mentioned, like that he had the greatest investment strategy in the world and became a billionaire. Like Chipper Jones is still going to be white trash, which is that's kind of what's endearing about him. Like, you can truly take the boy out of the trailer, but you can't take the trailer out of the boy. Like, it is unbelievable when you look at that Wikipedia page.
I don't think you guys, this had happened by the time for you guys to have the beer garden the other day. What'd you think of the Maryland reaction to everything this week?
Oh, my God. Where do you want to begin?
Oh,
wherever.
God. Here we go. Are we about to get triggered? I'm triggered.
Do you want to start with, I mean, Maryland, in their initial response from the AD, they took the blame there, which that kind of surprised me because essentially at that moment, they basically took credit for murder. Like from that moment forward.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, let's keep this in context, but I was surprised they did that from a legal standpoint.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, if we're going to talk about this, I was trying to analyze it from the straight up legality. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh my God, they just basically took credit for murder.
Well, they did. They were absolutely culpable.
Right. It's one thing to take, for instance, it's one thing to have killed the kid like they did. It's another on your first public response to take the blame for the kid
to plead
dying.
Guilty, opening up the level of lawsuit that is coming.
Especially when
we're keeping this in a niche here, in a context.
Yeah, no, and I am too. But the thing is, guys, they don't have a defense. They absolutely have no defense.
I still think 99.9% of colleges on first response would have been much more vague than that early on.
Yes.
Well, it's very likely that settlement talks are already well underway.
Yeah. This didn't happen this week. I mean, that's the thing.
Okay, so that's point number one. That was remarkable to me. Point number two, holy S. What the hell was the president of the University of South Carolina doing doubling down on Will Muschamp?
Oh, because, can I answer that real quickly?
Well, no. I mean, this is my theory.
Yeah.
My theory is essentially what he's saying is we know football money, football donations, the success of this football program vastly impacts this university. So therefore, I'm going to, I mean, you did see, we had a surprising 9-win season last year. Therefore, I'm going to double down on Coach Muschamp, because even though I'm the president of the university and I have an academic responsibility, like that's actually the job of the president. I kind of get it. Hey, man, football money's a little more important. Like, that was breathtaking to me.
Took a break in our talk with Jeffrey Wright to tell you that the podcast is brought to you in part by Locker Stockers. They can take the hassle out of stocking your locker or suite this game day season, whether it be Vaught Hemingway, the Pavilion, or Swayze Field. The customer places the order, and they'll handle purchase and delivery to your locker or suite before game day. Give them a call at 662-586-1487 or info at lockerstockers.com for more information.
How well do you know your credit? Brian McLaurin is an experienced attorney offering a unique, highly personalized service to not only repair credit, but also educate clients on the ever-changing world of credit. He will work with you for an entire year to help you create a personalized plan to raise your credit score to help you meet your financial goals. No one else offers this kind of personalized credit counseling. This is why Gambrell and Associates refer their clients to Brian to get a fresh start. So whether you are looking to fight off debt collectors, get approved for your home car loans, or for that luxury credit card, let Brian McLaurin get your credit fixed and teach you how to take control of your credit. Brian provides you the valuable information he has acquired through years of experience and research. This allows Brian to offer a unique personalized service for anyone in any state, as he is always available to his clients by phone and email, and he's ready to work with you. Contact Brian at bhmclaurinlaw@gmail.com or call him at 662-298-2029. This podcast is also brought to you by the Oxford Park Commission. OPC youth basketball registrations right around the corner. It begins on September the 4th, right after Labor Day. Sign up your son or daughter for one of their leagues. The age range is 5 to 15. The cost is $50. Last year, they had more than 600 kids take part in the leagues, and the numbers are expected to be similar this year. So don't miss your opportunity when it comes to sign up for OPC youth basketball. Check it out at oxfordparkcommission.com. And the podcast brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Now back to Jeffrey Wright on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. It told me that the guy at South Carolina, what you just said, and he also thought to himself, you know, my meathead coach could easily do what that meathead coach did. And
well, he did support him.
Here's the thing, guys. DJ Durkin was on that field when this happened. DJ Durkin was on the field when they saw this young man, Jordan McNair, begin to struggle to the point that he could not stand. Begin to struggle to the point that, according to some people there, it appeared that he was having convulsions. He was there when the head trainer at the University of Maryland yelled at two of McNair's teammates to, quote, drag his ass across the field, end quote. He was there. Durkin was there. Durkin was there. He was there when it became obvious that Jordan McNair could not continue. He was there when the athletic trainers at the University of Maryland did not do what every athletic trainer in the country is trained to do in those scenarios, which is very simply, it is to take his body temperature in two ways, orally and rectally. All jokes aside, you got to know what the guy's body temperature is. Had they done that and realized that he was in dangerous territory, very likely as high as 108 to 110, even at that point, even the collection of jackass meathead football coaches at that point could have put him in an immersion tank of cold water They have those. I pass by them at Ole Miss every day on my way to practice. They've got tanks of cold water ready for the players to cool off in after practice. Had they gotten him into one of those tanks, his odds of survival are over 99%. They failed, and DJ Durkin was there when they failed, which tells me that at no point did DJ Durkin say, hey, is he okay? Is he going to be all right? At no point. I realize he's getting fired sometime Friday, but DJ Durkin's ass should not only be fired, there should be a criminal charge against him, that meathead strength coach, and that entire athletic staff that was out there that day. That was negligence. They killed a 19-year-old boy to prove a point about how tough Maryland football was going to be.
This is what drives me insane. These coaches talk about there is an attack on football. There's a war on football. Okay, let's even run with the premise that that's not the dumbest thing I've ever heard, because I just looked at how football was doing financially. It seems to be doing it. If that's war, I would hate to see what peacetime looks like. But let's run with your premise. Okay, guys. You make zero steps. Like, they do the slippery slope argument. Instead of let's look for ways that we can improve the way we play football, we look for ways that we could improve. For instance, Buddy Tevens, the guy that was at, is he at Dartmouth? Who is the guy that doesn't allow tackling?
Yeah,
they do is tackle the dummy.
Yeah, it's the Dartmouth guy.
Most coaches snicker at him. You know how I know that? No one else is doing it. Like, if you want this game to survive and you want to combat maybe this war on football that, let's be real, all you, like, it's exactly what happens when dumb guys start getting called out. They immediately just start attacking everyone, you know, just go ad hominem attack. For instance, Will attacking Adam Rittenberg. Can you believe that? And my favorite is when they attack the journalist and they just say, like, they just start talking about anonymous sources. There was no rebuttal. There was no strong denial of what was in the story. There was just, I just don't like the way that was written.
Well, and the line that gets lost in that story, and I'm sure that Will Muschamp failed to read it, was that ESPN did not release that story without contacting. We all know how journalism works. They contacted the University of Maryland and said, hey, we're writing a story, and here's what it says. We'd like to get comments from your president, your athletic director, your football coach, the head trainer, the strength coach. We'd like to speak to all of those people on the record. The University of Maryland said none of them are available for comment. And that's what they wrote, that they asked to speak to them and that the University of Maryland did not let them be available for comment. It wasn't a hit. That's not a hit piece.
Well, the best part is the thought of Adam Rittenberg, a guy who's the quote-unquote college football insider. Like, he has to cover all of college football. The thought of Adam Rittenberg just deciding one day, kind of like a little pencil in his mouth, maybe kind of just leaning back in his chair, wonder how I can get DJ Durkin. Like, it's hilarious.
This is becoming difficult for me because I was intending to spend a lot of time this football season kind of cheering against and making fun of Michigan, and now there are two programs in the Big Ten that I hate a lot worse than Michigan. And so it's kind of like trying to hate the Pirates. It's hard.
Yeah, but I believe in you.
I'm going to try.
Yeah, I mean, as I told Neil, Baylor was doing despicable things, and we still found room to make fun of Texas over the years.
Yeah, so we can do it. It's going to take more heavy lifting.
Yeah, no.
I was on the other side. I hated Baylor more than I hated Texas at that point.
Yeah.
Like, I told y'all, like, I'm in this weird spot, man. Like, I'm running out of coaches to hate.
Actually, you showed me something, Neil, because I think this got through the cracks. I didn't realize Durkin was on the field. I thought it was just the strength staff, one of those voluntary workout deals.
He was down there observing. He can't be participating, but yeah, he was observing. Hmm. It's his program.
Well, of course.
You see a kid suffering, you got to say, hey, wait, what are we doing here?
Hold on. This is the BS that drives me insane. When they try to act like a coach didn't know, this is what dumb people do. Dumb people micromanage. That's exactly what they do. They know everything that's going on. Like, it drives me insane when you have these guys that know every single detail about the football program, unless it puts culpability on that person. Then all of a sudden he didn't know.
The other thing is that we have so much information now, science, technology, about athletic training. What in the hell were they thinking?
You said DJ Durkin was on the field, right?
It was trying to impress the head football coach as to how tough we are.
He was also accused of letting an overweight football player eat candy bars in front of his team.
No, not letting him.
Well, making.
Forcing.
Yeah, forcing
him. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not dealing with a Rhodes Scholar here.
No, but it's just remarkable that an institution.
This is why it drives me insane. I have been, and I will now, and if you're sick of hearing it, here you go. You're going to hear it again. I will keep championing this because I know it's true because I've seen it. You people that think football is complicated and that you think that these coaches are somehow superior in their mind, you are suckers. That's their whole end game. Like, they're not smart. Houston Nutt. Hugh Freeze, they're the same person. They were just packaged differently. You know how I know that? I've looked at their offensive numbers. If you actually look at when they were in SEC football play, the numbers are staggering. Yet Hugh was packaged a little differently, and Houston Nutt's a punchline. They're all the same person. It's how when Bill Belichick decides, hey, you know, I know we got an offensive system, but that's not what it's going to take to beat the Colts this week. So we're going to scrap all of that, and we're going to come up with something new. Oh, my God, Bill Belichick's a genius. Literally just doing what is sensical makes you smart in that profession. Like, stop. Like, if you ever find yourself thinking that this coach is brilliant, make sure you read about him. Make sure you find something that he's actually done or said that you go, wow, I never thought of that like that. That's pretty smart. And then what really drives me insane is just because a guy can win some football games, all of a sudden he becomes like a moral compass and a moral leader. Holy cow. He's a football coach. Almost all of us have played football. I love football as much as any human being out there. I am legitimately depressed when the world doesn't have football. The last 2 weeks, I'm watching freaking preseason football, and I couldn't be happier. But have you ever once thought, man, you know, that position coach, I need to go to him for more life advice. You know, investment strategies. Like,
marriage counseling.
That's what they are. The football coaches. And there's nothing wrong with being a football coach. Where it gets completely out of whack is when people start putting all of this emphasis and this grandeur on someone who can essentially get 11 guys to do the same thing at one time.
Why is it that we do that with college coaches, but we don't do it with NFL coaches? I mean, nobody ever goes Sean Payton, life coach. You know what I mean? They just go Sean Payton, offensive genius.
Because
nobody goes. Bill Belichick. He has the keys to that to happiness. It's just no. Bill Belichick is like knows how to run a football program.
Because there's no awkward power structure in the NFL. You know what I mean? Like Sean Payton can win as many games as he wants, but at the end of the day, Mickey Loomis is the one putting the team together. And at the end of the day, the Benson family is cashing the check. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Peyton doesn't have to recruit and prove that he's a molder of men.
Right. So in college football, it's all about branding. And everything comes down to the obvious answer is it's about recruiting and having a recruiting brand. because, back to my original point, they're too stupid to adapt. For instance, Hugh Freeze could have adapted the way that he recruited, but he doesn't want to. Like, he has, that was the whole reason, like, it was all about that stupid BS message, because he's too dumb to figure out another way to do it.
Yeah, you done?
Yeah.
You right? Resting your case?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay.
You win. The defense has no argument. It's been a bad month. And both of these guys, Durkin and Meyer, are still employed right now. Still employed.
That's the other
here's
thing.
The part. Now, let me say this. Here's the part that's got to be damning. Is if Adam Rittenberg and ESPN never write that story, that strength coach, he's still there.
And that's the best part. That strength coach is going to be act like Adam Rittenberg's the evil guy.
Yeah, the bringer down of the program.
Yes.
There's no doubt. So, anyway, did you find us a golf tournament to cheat in this weekend, Jeffrey?
I've got my own club championship, so I'll be sandbagging in that, too.
What okay. Are you going to just shank a few on Saturday?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come out and have Chase hit my drives, and so that way I'm always in play.
Just turn the club face over a little bit. You'll hit it out of bounds. It'll look normal, look natural. It's all good.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That's it.
Who's on the show today?
Well, there's a lot of right to left holes right now. So for you, you just hit that big old left-handed cut and we're good.
Yeah, gotcha. Who y'all talking to?
So today we'll have Neil on the program with Jeff, and we will have Chris Harrington, and then we'll have the new USL soccer coach for the Memphis team. He will be on the program at 10:25.
Real quick question. How will USL do there? The reason I ask is I was in Cincinnati with Carson to see the Cubs get swept by the Reds earlier in the summer, and we were sitting there talking to a couple of guys at over the Rhine. I can't remember the name of the place, the fried chicken place that was phenomenal, and they were talking about that in Cincinnati that USL team gets like 25,000, 30,000 a game. Memphis won't do that well, will it?
Oh no, I think the goal is to get somewhere. I think the goal is to get somewhere around like 8 to 10. And I think initially it'll do pretty well because they're putting it downtown. It'll be like a new hipster thing to do. I think it'll do okay.
Last thing, I know you got to go in a second. I don't even have it on my list over here. Just kind of curious. Memphis spend any time at all on the whole Mark Dotson thing from yesterday? Is that newsworthy up there?
We didn't talk about it, okay. But it came out after our show, but I didn't hear anyone else talk about it.
Yeah. Not good enough on the field.
Not good enough on the field. Didn't play here. You know what I mean? There's just not enough connection.
Yeah. I got you. I was just curious. I mean, like I said, it'd been played here and I don't have it written down.
Did Ole Miss's morally superior program talk about that?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess he left, so he's
it's all alleged, Jeffrey. Alleged.
Ah, yeah, of course. Alleged.
Have a good day. Talk to you soon. Thanks to Michael and Jeffrey for joining us this morning. Packed show. Hope you learned a lot, and then we're entertained by Jeffrey, someone who never likes to lose an argument or not get the last word. So we will be back with another show tomorrow. You'll get the recording from Funky's. As our Friday podcast, so come out, hang out. But if you can't make it, it's okay. We'll get a recording to you in the morning. Probably drop late tonight, early in the morning. I think it went up around 7 a.m. Last Friday after we talked with Todd Wade. So either way, we'll have one more podcast this week. Plenty of coverage at RebelGrove.com. Neil.
Yeah, let me remind you that all of our guests, Jeffrey Wright, Michael Thompson, everyone who joins us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. It's tailgating time. You want to get set up for all of your high school tailgates, college tailgates. Maybe you're making a road trip to Houston for Ole Miss's opener. Check out BillysPecans.com, the cinnamon spice pecans, the toasted pecans, all the different chocolate pecans. cheese crispies, and so much more. It's billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. Speaking of tailgating, don't forget, you can still get all your tailgating set up. 7 South Tailgating, Kyle Thornton and the people there at 7 South can take care of you, whether you're coming up for one game, all the games, two of the games, whatever, whether your tailgate is intricate or whether your tailgate is really simple. You can rent all of the stuff from them, or they'll set up your personal gear. They're in business 10 years this season. If you try them once, you'll never tailgate without them again. No one matches their customer service, their attention to detail at 7southtailgating.com.
So check out rebelgrove.com. A soft verbal presented by Billy's Pecans is up now.
Goes the opposite way with this one to deep center field.